And now, beautiful people going fast on fire. Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast, Kino Club Edition.
Welcome to True Fiction's Kino Club, where we discuss movies old and new. Tonight, we will be discussing the 1994 John Carpenter horror movie, In the Mouth of Madness. This movie stars Sam Neill, Julie Carmen, Jürgen Prochnow, David Warner, and Charlton Heston. Neill stars as John Trent, an insurance investigator who visits a small town while looking into the disappearance of a successful author of horror novels and begins to question his sanity as the lines between reality and fiction seem to blur. But before we get started, I would like to ask everyone listening to go to Spotify or your favorite podcast app and subscribe to the show. That way you'll never miss an episode, and it really helps us. Now let's get started. Kino Club roll call. I'm Pat.
I'm Norbert.
I'm Marshall.
In the Mouth of Madness. This is actually a kind of weird trilogy of John Carpenter's. This is part of what is called the Apocalypse Trilogy, and In the Mouth of Madness was preceded by The Thing and in 1982 and The Prince of Darkness in 1987. What did we like about this movie?
I liked the structure of it, the way it was set up. I liked the use of the going back in time. It, sometimes that doesn't work, starting at present day and then going back, and then sometimes that doesn't work. In this case, I think it worked really well, especially well in terms of telling the story, because you are presented with how competent Sam Neill's character is and how things sort of devolve. And I think if you'd start out with making that front and center, then it lends credibility to how things evolve and makes it stronger. So from that standpoint, just right off the bat, I think that's a great foundation. And I think Sam Neill, I like Sam Neill. I thought the casting was good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the setup of this movie. I do remember when it first came out and I read about it in Fangoria magazine, and there were shots of him at the very beginning in the cell. And I thought, wow, this looks very interesting. This is with the crosses and things. And I thought, this looks really trippy. And it really got me hooked. And actually, what you're talking about, I think, is another thing that I liked about it was when any story that you listen to or you read or you hear or you watch, it needs to grab you to make you ask questions. And this one, it really did. At the very beginning of this movie, you're asking, what in the hell is going on with this guy? What is happening? And so I think it did a great job to get you interested in the flick just right off the bat.
I really liked a lot about this movie. This is actually one of my all-time favorite horror films, so it's hard for me to be objective towards it.
But me too, I'm trying.
But I love this movie, and it's hard to be... I know that it has faults, and I could definitely talk about them, but it's difficult, I think, sometimes to see through it. I don't know if it's because it's a horror film that I've liked for so long that it just has a special place in my heart, that it's hard. I look past all the what could be bad about it. I like Sam Neill a lot. I like the rest of the cast. I felt like the special effects were amazing for a horror film. Everything has this very jarring sort of scare and creep to it that I think really a masterclass in how to do that to a lot of other horror films. And it just builds this tension that just continues to go on throughout the movie. But at the same time, it doesn't get dull or it doesn't seem to wane in any way as far as creating tension or creating horror. And I love the concept of it too. When I think about the concept, and I thought all the acting was great. Just the story is such a cool story too, I think, as far as who Sam Neill's character is and what he does in the movie. And so lots to like about this movie for me.
One thing I will say is that for a horror film, there's not very much gore in it. There's not... it's surprisingly sparse on that. It's very much trying to set up a situation where you are afraid for your characters and you're creeped out by what's happened. But in terms of what actually happens, there's not a ton of things that are like, oh my gosh, that's gory. There's weird stuff, there's sick stuff, but more it's the sort of, you're losing your grip on reality. And I think that's, in some ways, it's almost more scary than physical things happening when you're losing your sense of what is real and what is not real. That's terrifying when you're not sure, you know, what is going on around you. Is it you? Are you crazy? Are you not crazy? So from that standpoint, I think as a horror, I'm not a horror aficionado, so I'm coming out at this from outside that lane. It just seems like to me, the real greatness of what they're talking about is you having grasp of reality, which I can imagine if you're somebody that struggles with being lucid and knowing what's going on around you, that's got to be terrifying.
Oh, absolutely. One thing that I really like about this movie, Carpenter doesn't depend on jump scares, although there is at least one really good jump scare in this movie. He does a great job of ratcheting up the tension. For me anyway, I was very tense. And as the story unfolds, it's like you're watching a story and then it's telling you another story that's going on. And I think that's really interesting. And the way that it just naturally fills in, I just love the way that works out. I don't think you could have got any better person to play John Trent than Sam Neill. He is an amazing actor. It's weird. I never really think about him as a horror movie actor, but he definitely is. One of the first movies I've ever seen him in is called The Possession. And if you want to see a twisted, bizarre movie, as a matter of fact, it was banned in America when it first came out. It was a hard to get film. I think it's now on Shudder, but it is a trip. And then I think we've all seen and like Event Horizon. So Sam Neill was the perfect person to play this role. So the woman that played Stiles, Julie Carmen, she was a hot property back then around 94. She also was in Fright Night Part 2, which I just watched not too long ago.
When you think of Sam Neill, obviously he's the paleontologist from Jurassic Park. That's probably his best known role for everybody.
Yeah.
And he plays the uber competent, smart person well. He has that down pat. And that's a good casting. That's one of the things that I wonder how many times when you have a movie that doesn't work, it's that they're not quite dialed in with the cast with the role that needs to be played. And if they're just out of phase, so to speak, a couple of the main ones out of phase where they need to be, that causes that kind of, I should have liked that better than I did.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like this movie is very artistically written. It says a lot and it accomplishes a lot in the movie. I think there's a lot of layers to it as far as how you can interpret the movie, whether you interpret it metaphorically or just face value for what's happening in the movie. But I always think about, too, whenever he's reading the books and he's getting into the books and he begins to rub his eyes and he gets the ink on his eyes. What a great metaphor for kind of what's happening. And there's a lot of little things that help push the plot along and make it interesting to show the subtext of the story, and which I think is fascinating. I don't think you get that with a lot of horror films, let alone films today.
I really think that's why John Carpenter is a master of horror, because he made Halloween, which is one of the biggest horror movies ever made, started a whole genre of horror. I'm not saying that there weren't slashers before him, but he perfected the slasher and he created an iconic character. and tried not to revisit the guy, because even with Halloween, when Halloween 2 came out, when he went to Halloween 3, Season of the Witch has nothing to do with Michael Myers. I was just thinking about that. He doesn't like to repeat himself in a lot of things. I'm not saying that he hasn't, of course. He did Escape from New York, then he did Escape from LA. But for the most part, he's always reaching for something different, something new. That's what I like about this movie. It's very fresh. It's not something that we've seen before. Oh, and the other thing I just love about this is I'm a huge H.P. Lovecraft fan, and this basically is a tribute to Lovecraft. The name itself is basically based on the name of In the Mountains of Madness, which is a very famous Lovecraft story. And this is probably the best Lovecraft story that is actually not a Lovecraft story. They are really hard to get right, the movies anyway, with Lovecraft. This is perfect. To me, this is a perfect representation of the type of a Lovecraft story that could be made.
It's the kind of movie that would be, if it's not done deftly, it would be just a horror movie. It wouldn't be anything more than that. And the attempt to what they went for, that is a bold move, Cotton. You have to be very confident to take on a material like this and succeed to the level he did.
He's a very confident film director, I think. I think that once he sets out to do this, he's basically doing it. I'm not going to say it's always been successful, but I think he gets it set in his mind. He goes for it. And another thing that was great about this flick is Charlton Heston doesn't have a huge part in this movie, but he kills it. I love that part every time I see Charlton Heston in this.
And it doesn't feel like a Charlton Heston kind of movie. That was what's cool about it. It doesn't have the feel of the epic. When he plays, most of the time he plays the tough guy or he's in charge. And he's in charge in this, but he says, I don't have the stomach for these kind of books. And I always thought that was, when I heard him say that, I was like, that was a cool little twist on what he normally does.
For me, this is one of Carpenter's best casts. Sam Neill, Jürgen Prochnow, David Warner, John Glover, who's the asylum, basically lead guy in the asylum. He's so good in this. Bernie Casey, just these great actors, and they're doing a fantastic job. If you watch this, you may remember the Adam Sandler movie where his grandmother puts on a Kiss mask.
I think that's Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore, yeah. Frances Bay plays Mrs. Pickman in the hotel, which is a very different part for her.
Yeah, which is another good cast because that's part of what you want that character to be from the outside looking in. You want her first impression to be what you normally see that actress play.
Absolutely. And here's an early cameo for you Star Wars fans. There's a paperboy in this that is Hayden Christensen from the horrible Star Wars movies. No, the newer Star Wars movies.
The less bad ones.
That's true. The less bad ones. That's true. So are we ready to move on to our dislikes of this movie?
I am.
Begrudgingly, yes.
Yeah. And now I won't say this has taken me a while to admit some of the things that I don't like. And I remember talking to Norbert before this, and I told him there will be one visual scene that could be bad enough to take him out of the movie. And there is a bad practical effect, but it's just not good. And if it were me, I would have probably cut that scene or changed it. And I'd love, if I ever talked to John Carpenter, I would ask him about that scene. It's with Stiles when they're leaving and she gets out and starts walking around on her hands outside. So you guys know what I'm talking about. I don't really want to give anything away because I think everybody listening should watch this, by the way. But that's the scene that I wish that had never been shot or they'd have done a better job. And this is K&B Effects Group. It's
Greg Nicotero.
This is Greg Nicotero's company that did the effects on this. And that's the same company that did the effects for Walking Dead and Creepshow on Shudder. And I don't know if they just didn't have the money. And the effects, some of these effects are really good. Some of them are not so good. That's one problem I have with this, is some of the effects in it.
I am going to echo that. But I've had... my biggest problem with Carpenter is he wants to show you all these things. And I wish he would be much more coy about showing stuff when it to be scary. Matter of fact, when the effects don't work as well, all that light on seeing everything just takes you, to me, it just goes, oh yeah, I'm watching a movie. As opposed to, what is that? I see what that is, and it looks gross or whatever, scary. To me, that's a more effective way to do that. In so many ways, he is uber competent, and sometimes maybe your confidence is your weaknesses as well. He's so confident about doing what his storytelling is. Maybe be a little less confident on your special effects.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I know the first couple times I seen this movie didn't ruin it for me, but I talked to some people that they had some problems. They didn't have big enough tires, basically. They got stuck in the mud on those effects.
I would argue that the issue with the effects might even be, I would ask, have you always felt that way about the effects from the first time that you saw the movie to now? Because I almost wonder if it's a analog transitioning to digital media issue, to where those effects might have been okay on analog film previously, but then when we transitioned and we got it on DVD and we were able to see things a little more clearly, maybe they didn't carry through as well. Things were exposed a little more. That's just my thoughts on it. I love that scene where she's walks out of the car. I'll leave it at that. I love it for its creepiness. And I think that, yeah, if I look at it long enough, I can figure out what's going on. But ultimately, I still think it builds and adds to the movie and appreciate it for what it is. But if I had any problems with this movie, it's maybe some of the, towards the end, the way the plot carries out and moves along, it seems like it maybe lingers a little bit and isn't as direct in its message of the story as other parts of the film are. And it seems to push on, but I think, not to go back to talking about what I like, but something that I do like about that also is that I don't want to ruin the ending for anybody, but the ending seems to have this very much, it allows your mind to imagine what's happening feeling to it, which I think is pretty cool. It leaves it up to the viewer what's happening. What else would I say I didn't like? It's a tough one to really go. I'm so biased about what I love this movie. It's hard to say. It seems to shift gears abruptly, I think. There's definitely a big divide between when the movie starts to when they arrive in the town that they're going to. It seems that the movie feels very segmented in that regard, which I don't like. But at the same time, I don't think it was like an accident or a mistake or anything, because I think it's also a lot of good plots, a lot of good stories have a beginning, middle, and end. And so I could see where that would be the reason it feels so segmented. We get a lot of exposition in the beginning, setting up who Sam Neill is. And then we go into this world and the things happen. And then at the end is we're wrapping up and the protagonist is learning his fate kind of thing. So I can't say I hate that. I dislike how segmented it feels. Some parts of the movie don't feel like they flow as well as other parts of the movie.
I know there was going to be some difference when they went into the town of Hobbs End, and there should be, because that's really a very different part of the movie. You know, we were in the city, now we're in this little town, and I think that works really well. I do think that the ending might have a little bit extra time to finish up. And it really felt like the movie just... Of course, when you watch a movie that you've seen so many times, you remember the parts, but you don't remember where those parts go. So while I was watching the movie, I said, I thought this already happened. Oh, no, now it's going to happen now. Okay. So it might be just part of what I watch. And there were parts I don't remember as well. And I feel like when we got close to the end, they do a lot to show John Trent his return, basically, which that's really for me, small potatoes. And I'm sure that is for you because I know you're just trying to find something. One thing I would say that if this film was done again, I would probably want a different actress to play the Styles character. I don't think she had the acting chops. There's some huge performers in this, and Sam Neill is so good. And I don't think she was horrible, but there are certain times that I didn't feel she did a great job in this movie. So I don't know who I would want to see, but I thought that there were certain times when I think she could have done a better job, or they could have had a better person other than Julie Carmen playing the Styles character.
I would agree with that.
As we were talking about the ending, I almost would have liked for the movie to end when the psychiatrist leaves at the end. I really didn't need to see any more. I almost would rather it not be, whether there's an apocalypse or not is all up to your interpretation. The construction and everything was so well done. I almost think, would it have been a little bit more interesting if it was ambiguous as to whether or not John Trent's actually going through this or he just went nuts? I don't know, but I think I would have liked it. The apocalypse part of it at the end, I don't know if that added much for me, but that's a small point.
I know we've already talked about the things we like. I just want to mention this one thing, and it's at the end. That's not really a spoiler. He goes in to see this movie and he has popcorn. And I think that is one of the funniest things in the whole movie.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And he's laughing at what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't think it was set out to be comedic. It maybe not as comedic because maybe I thought it was funnier than it was, but I thought there were some genuinely funny things that happened in this movie too. There was some humor in this, a little bit, not a lot, but there was enough. I don't know. I just think that is, here I go. I'm talking about what I like, but I just think that Carpenter is such a master. And I don't think all of his movies are fantastic. I do love Carpenter, but this movie really shows to me what he can do. Of course, this is one of my favorite Carpenter movies, so it's really hard to talk bad about it. I picked so many things out of this movie that I like: how it was directed, how the shots were set up, what he's trying to accomplish in this. He's dealing with a subject that you can't really show. I thought he did such a good job of expressing this unseeable horror. So I thought he did a good job with that.
Yeah. Is that part of what we don't like?
I like that. I know I need to stop that. Yeah. Yeah. There's a part in the hotel room where Styles comes back from visiting Sutter Kane. And I just don't think her acting is very good in that. She's got a real goofy look on her face. And I don't know.
She's not at the level the other ones are.
She isn't.
I mean, that's clear.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then again, that's tough to find. Think about how many actresses, what is this, 95? Yeah, I don't know who all you're going to get in that. Probably not going to get Meryl Streep or...
Sigourney Weaver is out there. She's too much, though. She would have been too much.
Well, you would have expected her to whoop everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
I could almost see Sigourney Weaver in that role, but almost. I bet she could do it, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's tough. You look at all these different actresses. And
hello. What's her name? Mary, the one from The Abyss. Elizabeth Master Antonio.
Master Antonio. Yeah, she would have been good. Yeah, that would have been good.
I think it's hard for me to pick out things that I don't like because I feel like this movie is so unique and what it accomplishes for a horror film. It's really hard for me to pick anything out and go, oh, I don't like this, or I don't like this part, because I don't have anything to really compare it to for what it accomplishes, I think, in the sense of, I think it's a good standalone horror film, but it's also a good Lovecraftian horror film, which don't, like you were saying previously, Pat, that they don't really have a great track record of showing Lovecraftian horror in film. And I think this does an excellent job of accomplishing that. I think there's a few movies that have came close, but nowhere as close as this movie.
We talked about what we like, what we did like. I think it's interesting that they call that a trilogy, that The Thing and The Prince of Darkness, I guess because of the Apocalypse trilogy, because they're basically all kind of ending. They don't actually all end in apocalypse, but you could play that out in any of those movies, the apocalypse.
Well, you could almost, so They Live in that too, couldn't you?
The ending of these movies are a little bit darker. None of those movies have a more of a positive ending. They Live does have a positive ending.
Sure.
So I would say that's probably true. What's going on. What's our final thoughts on this flick? Should our audiences go out and seek this out? You can find it on if you have Tubi, you can watch it with commercials.
I'll go first. As the resident non-horror fan here, I think that this was great psychological reality bending movie. This kind of thing is, as I said earlier, you've got to be a very confident director to try to pull something like this off. And overall, I think he succeeded way, way more than he fell down. And so I think if you're in a mood for that kind of movie, this is a great movie. Like I said, a few blemishes here and there.
I've already said this is one of my favorite horror movies. I don't know how many times I've watched this movie. Every time I watch it, I fall into this movie. I'm just sucked into this world with John Trent.
You never come out of anything with like crosses on your forehead.
Crosses on my forehead. Yeah. And my eyes look real funny. And then I'm always asking people, do you read Sutter Kane? It does have some faults, but I would recommend anybody that wants to see a smart horror movie to make you think just a little bit.
I feel the same way very much about this movie. I love this movie on so many different levels. And I think there are so many different layers of this movie that a lot of people can find something that they like about it. I think that I would recommend it to anybody that's a horror fan. I think as a horror film on its own, it's a terrific standalone horror film. Anybody who's a fan of Lovecraftian horror, I highly recommend this movie because it's probably the best representation of Lovecraftian horror within film. I think just overall, the performances are fantastic. I think there's so much that this movie accomplishes, and it doesn't really feel like it overexerts itself to do it. And what the plot is very complex. If you really think about what's happening, it's a thrilling idea. It's something that we don't see tackled a lot in movies. And I think it was executed very well. I love this movie and I highly recommend it.
That's three thumbs up, some a little bit higher than others, but that is definitely three thumbs up for In the Mouth of Madness, a John Carpenter classic. And there you have it, folks. Another episode of True Fiction's Kino Club in the books. Thanks for joining us for another round of Movie Madness and sharing your love for cinema. Don't forget to rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform and stay tuned for next week's episode. Until then, keep your eyes and ears open for the truth in fiction. Good night.
Night.
Bye.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the True Fiction Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please visit us at Facebook. You can also leave us a review on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. Until next time, stay true and stay creative. Hey, you're too late.